everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 237. Today we're going to be talking about Angel season 4 episode 2 Ground State and Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 7 episode 4 Help. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen. I'm a super fan and I'm all alone today, guys. Well, not completely. I'm the only super fan here, but I am also joined by Kristen and Mitch, who are our newbies for the week. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
So we're going to jump right into fun facts. Mitch, yours sounded pretty interesting.
Okay, so continuing on the saga of Mitch and Karen's alien adventures, I woke up at 4 a.m. from a very vivid alien abduction dream, the details of which were so disturbing that I don't think I would even want to share them, because God forbid they be true, I don't even know. It was weird, I'll just say that much. I don't know why I'm waking up at 4 a.m., but it's been kind of happening consistently, so maybe we can track something there, and a 3 a.m. is like the witching hour. So maybe my body's like waiting for the witching hour to be over. I don't know. Maybe I'm being visited by Evil Willow in my dreams. You can never tell. Karen, you were Evil Willow. If I just gave you a fun fact, you're welcome.
Thank you. Kristen, I hope your fun fact is happier.
Well, it kind of involves aliens. Ooh. Karen and I went and saw Thor Ragnarok on Thursday, and it was really fun. And I have to say, like, that movie is kind of insane, but I think it's insane in all the right ways. The entire internet seems to be abuzz with a certain cameo, and I really just can't wait till everyone in the world has seen it so I can be like, what the heck was even happening? Like, how did they manage it? What is going on?
Please give me a no comment, but I feel like it's going to be Tony Stark again. I'm probably wrong. I don't know. Just don't react. Don't react. Oh, no, you reacted.
Oh, it's so much better than that. It's okay. So much more random and just like, what is going on than that? Yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay. yes.
But Natalie Portman's not in that, is she?
Who?
Natalie Portman seems to be done with Thor and Marvel overall.
Yeah. As far as I know, yeah.
That sucks. I used to like her in that
movie. You wouldn't guess this cameo in a million years.
Never.
Like, it's okay. So random.
Oh my god, my last guess is Spider-Man.
Alright. Yes, as Mitch gave me a fun fact, although technically this was my fun fact last week as well. I did dress up as Dark Willow, and there are pictures on the internet of it. It was pretty fun. Basically, just like put, you know, red eyeshadow around my eyes to make me look like I was really tired, and then drew veins on my face with eyeliner, and put on all black clothes, and boom, done. It was like the quickest costume I've ever done, probably, and it was fun, and people liked it. Even people who didn't really watch Buffy were like, you look kind of scary. And I was like, you know what? That's what I was going for.
Did anyone recognize you?
Hmm?
Did anyone recognize you?
We were only around a couple of people. We had a party at our apartment. We didn't go out, and I think, I don't know who knew Buffy and who didn't. I just all told them who I was.
Yeah.
I was rather impressed by, like, the veins on your forehead. If I was drawing them on myself, it would not have looked like it did for you. Like, I was very impressed.
I just did squiggly lines.
Did you use black eyeliner?
They were beautiful, yeah. Squiggly lines.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kristen.
It was fun. I saw that and I was like, oh, wow, she has the perfect hairstyle for Dark Willow.
Yeah, see? Widow's Peak. Finally can do something with
perfect.
It. My dad was scrolling through Facebook, and he didn't know it was me at first.
Wow.
So Apparently I did do a good job.
I had some people say that about my costume. I was Gamora. It's like a double fun back there.
Yeah.
I was Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy, and I am still picking green out of my inner ear, because, God, does that stuff find a way. Oof.
I can imagine. I'm glad I didn't have to do anything extra. I thought I would have to make my face more pale, but it's really not. She's just kind of a pale person in general, so I just...
Yeah. I think it's like the dark eyeliner and like the dark hair that makes her look paler than usual.
And the black eye contacts.
Oh my god, yeah.
Like, yeah, which I did not do, but you know.
You know, I think what it made it when you had the book picture, when you were like absorbing the words.
Yeah.
That was cool.
That was Kristen's idea.
You could have written like words on your body, like on your arms and on your neck. That would have been cool. That would take a lot of work.
Also, but... the eyeliner smudges very easily, so that would have really been awful.
Take at it with Sharpie.
Yeah. It's worse than green in your inner ear.
Totally. My face was stained green for the next couple days, too. It was pretty bad.
Oh, that's awful.
Yep.
See, that's why I don't do this thing.
Never again.
Oh, God. All right, let's talk about Angel, episode 402, Ground State now. In this episode, an electric thief tongues Angel's throat and restarts his heart. Meanwhile, Fred is tired of playing dead mother, and Cordy is still bored of being a higher being. Also, Wesley is back rogue demon hunting with a little Lila time on the side. Okay, so let's start off with the big one, which is the heist to get the Ark in order to get Cordy back, or, you know, to find out where she is, at least. And this whole thing introduces Gwen, she's not a monster of the week, obviously, but, like, I don't know, freak of the week, almost. Like
freak of the Kristen. Week, yeah.
Hey! Yeah, I like a good Smallville reference.
So that was pretty cool. What did you guys think of her? Did you like her?
Yeah, I liked her a lot. She reminded me of Kristen Bell's character from Heroes, having the same kind of electric powers. But it seems like Kristen Bell could kind of like shock people on the outside, but Gwen has to touch them. So I guess that's their main difference there. But this is very like superhero-y, even for Buffy and Angel, to have a character that has such a specific power like this.
Yeah, I kind of got like, you know, rogue... almost like rogue flashbacks, like X-Men's Rogue. Like, I mean, she doesn't have the same, she has very different powers, but like the whole like have to touch them thing to use them kind of brought me there. But yeah. It was interesting. I don't know if I liked her because she was kind of, you know, problematic or whatever, but ultimately I liked what she brought to the show. Like she was She's a fun way to spend an episode. Like, meeting her was interesting.
And it felt like she was an homage to another character that I can't quite place because she was wearing all red all the time. And then she had maybe Rogue, yes, with, like, the long gloves. But also, like, the red top kind of reminds me of almost of Elektra, which is funny.
I was
going
to say that.
She doesn't have electric powers, as far as I understand, at least as far as I've seen in Daredevil, whatever. But she seems to be pretty normal. But Elektra, I always thought, like, hearing that name, she was going to be, like, a very electric. So maybe that's, they ran with that concept.
Maybe. Yeah. She's really fun. She kind of, like, breathes life into the episode and the show in a lot of ways because she's so spunky and she's got a really strong personality and she kind of doesn't care what anyone thinks of her. And she's a badass. And I really like seeing her kick butt, and I really like the way that she's not completely a bad person, but you can tell, you know, she's had kind of a rough life and she's been dealing with these powers since she was a child and how dangerous they are. So you can imagine that it's kind of, she's a little bitter at this point, and she's careful with her powers, but she's also embraced her powers, you know, kind of the way that she's reclaimed the word freak.
You know, I just thought of something. How come her parents are still alive?
What do you mean?
Like, they had to take care of a baby, and I assume the baby had electric powers. So you change a baby's diaper, and you're not shocked to death? You pick a baby up, you help them walk, you hold their hand, nothing?
Maybe it was like being a wizard, and it didn't, like, come into its own until puberty.
So they, like, witnessed her kill a child or something, and they were like, all right, that's enough of you. Out with you now, child.
I mean, they still loved her. Like, they told her that, you know. They clearly cared for her, but didn't know how to care for her anymore.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that Gwen's last name is Raiden, and Raiden from Mortal Kombat also has electric powers, so...
That's totally intentional, it has to be.
Just saying, because Mortal Kombat is awesome.
I didn't put that together, I should have, just for you.
So she does kind of come into this episode and as, you know, this giant whirlwind and kind of really a lot of big things happen to the team. First of all, Gunn dies, so that's not great. Luckily, it's temporary. Were you guys worried that this was it for him?
Mm-mm. It's like one of those sci-fi fantasy deaths that you know is so fake. It just has no emotional toll to it. It's just like, he's dead. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little freaked when they actually said, like, he's dead. But I was like, okay, how are we getting him back? Like, that's, she's, you know, another shock or something. Like, somebody start doing CPR. Like, I was a little concerned, but not, like, panicked, because it did seem incredibly, like, random and sudden, and I was like, there's no way he's gone for good. Like, there's no way.
Although I do appreciate how they kind of kept the science going here, because they, in a offhand way, bring up the fact that Angel couldn't have done CPR for him saying to Fred, you would give me CPR, what if I wasn't there? Angel would rush me to the ER. So that kind of calls back to what they defined as not having breath, even though they're always breathing because they're actors, whatever. I'll let that one go. when he was trying to save Buffy, he had to have Xander do it in the season one finale.
Yeah, it's a good callback. Now, obviously, you know, you just mentioned Fred. This took a big toll on her. She kind of was really strong. You know, we see Gunn come back from the hospital and he's taking his medication and he's kind of, you know, awed at the fact that he's alive, and he is pretty chill about it, to be honest. And I don't know if, like, he's still in shock or he's just grateful he's alive. I'm sure he's had plenty of brushes with death before, so maybe this just isn't that big of a deal for him. But for Fred, it is a big deal, and it kind of takes a minute for her to break down and for her to admit that, like, she's completely freaked out. But when it comes down to it, her big problem, other than the fact that Gunn died and left her alone, which was a big deal, is that she's kind of tired of being the den mother, as you said, Mitch, in the opening. She picked up when Cordy left and when Angel left and when Lauren left, you know, she's kind of become the go-to person for the research and making sure that, you know, they have a plan and all this other stuff. And it's too much. It's too much responsibility on her shoulders. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciated this entire little arc she had this episode, because everyone else, meaning Gunn and Angel at this point, everyone else is kind of gone. But those two are really appreciative of her stepping up and her taking on the responsibility. And she doesn't see it that way. She sees it as not necessarily a burden, but it's a lot of work and it's a lot of emotional toll on her. And I just really liked the way that she ended up breaking down and telling him that she just can't do it. You know, she needs help. And that was a really important thing to see somebody do. So did you, I kind of got a little teary-eyed when she broke down. How did you guys react to this whole part?
Yeah, it was like a very surprising emotional thing. I didn't expect to feel the feels that I did this episode, and then they came. I'm happy I'm feeling that way about Fred and Gunn too, because they feel like they're fully initiated in my mind as not just pancakes, but also some form of Scooby. Like, they almost feel like they could have belonged in the Buffy universe all along, and I never would have noticed the difference that they had it now.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like Fred so much that it wasn't exactly how I expected her to react to this. Like, we all just, you know, kind of expected her to freak out and be like, you know, oh, Gunn, like, I'm so glad you're back. I freaked out. Like, I was worried. No, I didn't necessarily expect this reaction, but I'm so glad that it was how she reacted, because I can totally understand. Like, the second she kind of, like, freaked on him, I was like, good for you. Like, you absolutely deserve to have this reaction. Like, I was so surprised by it, but really, really happy that she would feel all of that in that moment. And so, yeah, it was a really good episode for Fred. Like, we got a lot of growth for her, and that's always good, especially with Cordy and Wesley kind of MIA as far as the team goes. It's nice to see that we're getting these, like, really important character moments for Fred while these other two are kind of missing and not really participating in group dynamics. So
mm-hmm. And I just want to point out too that I really like the depth of Fred and Gunn's relationship that we've been seeing lately, because in the beginning when they got together, it was all cute and it was all like honeymoon phase, and we saw them eating pancakes and kissing and being all gooey-eyed. And not that they don't do that, although we haven't seen it as much, I really like how comfortable they are around each other right now, and how it feels like kind of a long-standing relationship where she can come to him with her problems and he's, you know, he'll listen to her and he's supportive of her. And there's a tension in their relationship in this episode that doesn't come from the idea that, oh my God, they might break up, which I really appreciate, because I hate when characters finally get together, especially when you're talking like main characters. I'm talking like Oliver and Felicity. You know, they finally get together and everyone's happy, and then, you know, something terrible happens and they break up, because apparently that's the only tension that you can infuse into a relationship, is like all or nothing.
Or Luke and Lorelai. God, that was like so exhausting. It still is to this day, matter of fact.
That's the thing. Like, it works maybe once or twice, but in the end, like, you just want your characters to be happy. And there's a lot of other stuff that can go down in a relationship that is tough and can create conflict without it being an on-again, off-again thing all the time. So I just really liked how real their relationship felt in this episode. I thought it was good. Okay, so one of the other consequences of Gwen coming into the picture is that she restarts Angel's heart. That was kind of interesting.
The CGI was so specific. Like, it zoomed in to show it happening, and then it commercial braked. So I was like, oh, so that's a big deal. And then it doesn't come up again. Matter of fact, an anti comes up, because he goes, I don't need to breathe. And I assume if your heart's beating, you're breathing. Then we have the whole thing where he didn't breathe for the CPR already in this episode. I don't know. Because I know they didn't forget about him not breathing there, of course. But I mean, they kind of bring it up twice in this episode, so it almost feels suspect that he's not breathing, that they're like, you're going to start breathing eventually. If your heart's beating, your body will start picking up. That's my idea here. But I don't know. Is it still beating? They didn't really talk about it. It kind of just dropped.
Yeah, I'm kind of sort of wondering if maybe this is going to come back and be like a very important moment coming up here. Like, Angel's heart hasn't beat in like, what, 100 to, you know, some 100 years. I cannot keep the timeline straight, so it's been a while. And plus the hell dimension. Like, yeah. So when you take into account that it's been that long and he has not had an actual functional beating heart, and all of a sudden, you know, even the 3 or 4 beats that he got in this moment, like, just that, I'm wondering if that like resets something for him, or like, you know, maybe it will make, I think it's going to change something for his character. I don't know what, but like, I have this thing sitting in my brain, like, I can't get rid of it, because other words, why go to all the trouble of showing us his heart starting? They don't talk about it after it happens very much. Like, it's not like something that they talk about. Like, if Angel would have said, like, I forgot what it was like to have a beating heart, like, it reminds me of what all of you that are living for. Like, if they would have had a conversation like that, I would have seen it as just a way to remind Angel that everyone is human and, you know, like, the difference between him and those that are alive. Like, if they would have used it to have, like, a moment with him and Gunn or him and Fred or something like that, then I would have played it off as just, like, an episodic moment, something for them to touch on this week. But they didn't. And so I feel like there's something lurking, there's significance lurking for this. If there isn't, I'm going to be very let down. But it just, I don't know. There's got to be something going on. In other words, why go to all this trouble?
You know, I do see some kind of connection here with something else I noticed in this episode. Did you notice that Angel looked older for the first time? Like, he looked like he aged 5 years because of his new haircut in this episode. This is significant because he's always had that same hairstyle, and now he's finally having shorter hair, which I thought was just like a big coincidence here. Like, oh, whatever, it's not a big deal. They're just changing the character's look for the new season or something. But now I'm thinking about it, and I think they probably want us to see it gradually happen. So it could be that his heart beating, even for that period of time or continuously, will start to age him, maybe really quickly. I don't know. But regardless, I really do think he looked older in this episode, and I hope it has some kind of plot consequence, and it wasn't just something I noticed that was just, like, style for the actor.
Well, okay, this is, like, Kristen's crack theory time, because I don't know anything about this. Like, I have no idea. Clearly. But I'm wondering if this doesn't somehow tie into Spike's storyline. Because, okay, we've done this whole crazy airing order thing, and there's definitely a reason for all of that. And I can't, like, at some point these shows are going to touch. And I'm kind of wondering if this might have some sort of, like, connection to Spike getting his soul back or something like that. Like, I'm wondering if somehow this will be a bonding moment for them, or I don't know. That's the only thing that's sticking in my brain, is that there's another character who's undergone something like fate major, like physically major, but not at the same time. And it's just, I don't know, I can't get it out of my brain. So I've said it. Maybe now the earworm, the brain worm, will go away.
Didn't Angel sire Spike for Darla, like a present? Was I'm thinking, you know, there seems to be some kind of connection with, like, the sired person.
But wasn't it like a chain? Because Darla sired Angel. Angel sired Spike. Sired
Drew.
Drew, yeah.
Yeah,
Okay, yeah. So I feel like that could be another connection there. I don't know if there's any supernatural consequences to one sired vampire gaining a soul. They could write in something like that, so I can see that connection kind of coming in too, if I had to go on Kristen's crackpot theory route.
This may turn out to be nothing, and I just spent 10 minutes talking about this for no reason, but it just feels really random not to, like, talk about. If they don't address the pink elephant in the room, then there's got to be a reason for the pink elephant. Is more or less what I'm saying.
Well, you bring up a good point about the odd airing order, because I know it's probably just as hard for listeners to follow along as it is for us, but we're doing our best to follow what aired originally in order. I think that they're trying to set up more in Buffy before they do something in Angel, and it very much could be that they need to bring Spike over, because I could see him having more legs in this universe past the Buffy season series finale. I could see him having stuff to do in Angel now. Because it just feels like, I don't know, he got a soul for a reason. He has to do something with it. So he might as well become a pancake or something.
I mean, well, we're just starting this season, like, of Buffy and Angel. Like, we're just starting. So there's a long way to go. But there's just something that I feel like is cooking. That's all.
Yeah. I think we're on the right tracks here. But Karen can't say anything.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I have to no comment all up and down this conversation, so I have no input, but very interesting theories, and I'd be interested to hear if any of our newbie listeners think that you guys are on the right track, or if they think you're totally crazy. But let's switch gears until we get back to what the Axis of Pythia actually ends up doing for this episode. and talk about a couple of the other points we get to see. First of all, kind of near the beginning of the episode, we do get Wesley with his own crime-fighting team, and he's not exactly warm when Angel comes to him, and Angel tells him that he forgives him for everything he did, and he hopes that they're cool now, and Wesley doesn't really say anything. You know, he doesn't accept it. They don't have a conversation. He gives him information about Cordy's disappearance because, of course, Wesley was looking into it as well. And then he just disappears. And Kristen, I know that you like Wesley and you've been a little concerned about him since he's kind of started going down the darker path. Were you disappointed that they didn't have a moment?
I mean, yeah, I am beyond ready for Wesley to forgive himself for the role he played. Like, what he did wasn't great, but he had the right motivations. And I think Angel's basically accepted that. And I think everybody else would accept it if he walked back into the fold. So I need him to, like, forgive himself for what he thinks he did wrong, because he's blaming himself for all kinds of things, and he needs to come back. It's just not the same. I need Wesley and his books back in this team, and, like, I think they need him too. Like, it's been too long, and I'm just, yeah. So I was a little frustrated that there wasn't more talk in this episode. Like, they had a confrontation, and it was good, and it wasn't terrible, but, you know, we need to keep moving down that path. And yeah, so I don't know, it's still just driving me crazy, but we've got to be getting close. Come on, we've got to be almost there.
Although it was a little ominous when Wesley said something about Angel being involved in whatever's coming up as well. And I forget the exact line he said, but you were talking about Wesley, you know, he just needs to come back and all of this. Like, are we sure he wants to come back? Maybe he hasn't forgiven the team.
I mean, it's definitely possible. I think it's more him, like, blaming himself than it's him not forgiving them. Like, I don't know. I could be really wrong. And yeah, they kind of freaked out on him, and it does bother me that they all took Angel's side and nobody went to Wesley. Like, nobody was concerned about him. That really did bother me and still does. But at this point, I don't think it's his feelings for the team that's keeping him apart from them. I think it's his feelings about himself. And he's always been one of those people who, like, takes it out hard. He's hardest on himself than he is everyone else. Like, and I think that's what's driving him right now. And I'm ready for him to stop beating himself up over things. Like, the sleeping with Lila thing can stop too, because it's not good for him. It's just not good for him.
Mitch, I don't think you're a fan of that either.
No, I'm not, because I think it's really just too much at this point. I get that they're together, but they make this, I think it's some, is this still on CW? One of them stayed CW, one of them went on, like, UPN, right? I think Buffy's on UPN?
Yeah, I think so.
So it feels like this is the CW appeal, that they have two hot actors sleeping together, but I don't need that anymore. Like, we've seen the effect of them being together. We don't need the entirety of the scene, and their dialogue doesn't have to be all in the throes of the bedroom. I could see them, and it's tough to write around that too, because they've had ones where they're getting dressed and all that. It's all becoming very exhausting and very much too much. I'm very over it. I don't want too much more of this. I hope that they back off of this in the writing room, and they're like, okay, maybe we're giving these tweens too much sex, and they can see some more beheadings instead.
Yeah, that's definitely better than sex.
Yes, totally.
I mean, I don't like Wesley and Lila together, because Lila is evil and I don't trust her, but, like, I don't know. They have chemistry, man. Like, it's kind of hot, so I can't, like, I like it, but I don't want to like it, which is very confusing. But I do think that, you know, this has actually been a plot point that's been carrying on for a little while now. Not necessarily the sleeping together part. I mean, that's kind of been in the back half. But Lila's been kind of chasing after Wesley to be part of Wolfram and Hart for quite a while now, basically since everybody's abandoned him. So I think it's definitely interesting that they continue walking down this path and nothing's happened yet, but we'll have to see which way it turns. Lila clearly has some plans, and she, you know, kind of stumbles upon on purpose, seeing Connor, who's currently homeless and kind of just sleeping under a blanket on the street. And Angel threatens her, as you do. And that was I liked that threat. I like when Angel gets a little scary. I think Brittany would agree with me there, but, no idea what Lila's up to. You know, she's the boss now and she's got plans, but she also needs to be respectful of the playing field, and Angel is a big player there. But I just kind of wanted to gauge how you guys felt about the fact that Connor's homeless and sleeping on the street, and whether or not you think Angel is doing the right thing by him.
I think he's fine. Like, as Fred put it, he's like letting him off too easy. I still think he should be not even caring for him at this point. I think he's past the point of saving. Like, Cordelia even like purified his soul, and that still wasn't enough. This kid's got some like major issues, and he's like a therapist to deal with this. He can't just be like, like, Angel's trying to do what he did with Faith and, you know, trying to rehabilitate him, and it's not going to work. I think it will work, but in reality, it shouldn't work. I know story wise, it has to, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it would be like to grow up in a hell dimension, and I'm pretty sure that can mess with your brain. So, like, I don't blame him for how he sees Angel, because, like, that's how he was raised, and it's hard to kind of put that stuff from, you know, your childhood behind you. And it's been a big, you know, crazy couple of episodes, weeks, months, I don't even know. It's been months at least. Angel was in the water 3 months. So, yeah, like, he hasn't had it easy. And so I see why Angel isn't as, like, why he's not damning his son because of all of this. Like, he knows that Connor needs to kind of, I think he knows he needs to work through this on his own, and he's not just going to be able to say, this is what you need to do, do it now, you know, let's move on. He needs Connor to come to the realization that he's not, like, the purest of evils, like, but he's also not blaming him and, you know, hating him over throwing him in the water, because he knows what Holtz did. He knows what Connor's, you know, been taught to think of him. And so now I think it's basically on Angel and Connor to kind of move forward, and for Angel to show him, you know, what exactly is important to him, and hopefully that can change, you know, from here on out.
Yeah, definitely. And I think some people would think Angel is being hard on Connor, considering he's letting his child be homeless. But again, like Mitch was saying, I think he's fine. Connor grew up in the hell dimension. He can take care of himself. He can sleep on the streets of LA. It's probably a nice vacation for him. But on top of that, Connor is definitely the kind of person that needs to, again, work through this stuff on his own. And him being forced to live in the hotel with everybody, including his father, is going to have a different kind of connotation to it than if he chooses to come back and live there and be a part of it, because Connor doesn't do so well with the whole, like, you know, his father telling him what to do kind of thing. He's going to rebel against it just because of how he grew up and the fact that he's, you know, a freaking teenager. That's kind of just what they do. But if he can work through his issues and then come to the realization of, you know, Angel is a good guy and I want to be a part of this team, then that is going to hold a lot more weight. So we'll just have to see what happens. But I'm of the mind that Angel's doing the right thing here too. But even though he's concerned about his son, he is much more actively concerned about Cordelia in this episode. Lauren's not being too much help, and Angel goes to this other demon creature thing that was like a weird gargoyle. I don't even know what it was. It was kind of creepy, though. I really liked the scene, actually, because, you know, it lets him go because he has a lot more suffering to do. And the demon was like, yeah, that's a lot more fun. So I'm just going to let you go on your way. And I'm just like, you know what? What's new? Angel's going to suffer.
You know, it was so
cheesy. And he's going to be happy about it.
I was waiting for someone to. I liked the character a lot because as Power Rangers E as it was, it was still almost like Star Wars Puppeteer E. Especially from the wing effects, like not just the fact that it was fluttering and you would look around it, be at a different angle, but I'm saying like creepy. How the scene ends with like how its wing extends over Angel. I really liked that. I thought that was some kind of smart engineering or camera trickery or something. And even the way that they light it and they have like a veil over their face to make them look more mysterious and the whole like bodysuit, it felt very well put together and like they took a lot of time to do it. It didn't make it any less cheesy. But it's still, I could tell they put a lot of hard work into that character.
I think the imagery was really good there. Very striking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I hope that the Dinza demon comes back, although you probably won't come back from an angel, so maybe you'll have to fight your way shirtless through hell back or something like you always tend to.
But this all leads Angel to the Axis of Pythia, and he uses it in order to find Cordelia, which he realizes is now a higher being. And he tells Fred and Gunn this, and they're all kind of like, you know, this is so good. Like, I'm sad that she's not here, but she's a higher being, and that's important, right? And the episode once again ends with Cordelia, and this time she's like, hey, come get me. What are you doing? You guys are idiots. And Kristen, I know you were like, can we just stop with the whole like 30 seconds of Cordy at the end of the episode thing now?
It's pretty cheesy.
Yeah, it's just like, come on. Like, it's really frustrating because I want her back. And I want, you know, I at least want to know what's going on for her. Like, if she's just sitting there bored, I guess that would be a really boring episode. But like, I want to know. I want to know what is going on with Cordy. And these little, like, check-ins at the very end of the episode are kind of making me nuts. So let's just hope the next episode we get her back or, like, find out exactly what's going on with all of this.
I mean, honestly, it's probably just to give Chris McCarpenter a little bit of acting to do in each episode. Because think about it, like, Connor doesn't even talk in this episode, and she barely does, but they're still in the main credits. Wesley's barely in it either.
I mean, they don't want us to forget about her. I think we need to, we need the reminder that she's not there, but that she's still a part of this thing. Like, she's not going anywhere. She is coming back, clearly. She has to. So, like, these little reminders are just like, yep, she's still gone. Yep, we remember that she's not here, and, you know, you need to remember that, too, and it's just enough to make me crazy.
And that kind of leads us into the international titles, because the French one is called Cordelia, Where Are You?
Aww.
Cordelia,
right?
Oui, es tu. I said that in a Spanish accent, because I don't speak French.
And the German title is The Axis of Pythia. So, that one, they're both a little on the nose, I would say.
Yeah.
The English title, Ground State, is a little more poetic, I think.
And refers more to Gwen than Cordy, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think it should, because it's more about her. She's the freak of the week, that's fine.
Yeah.
All right, favorite scenes now. I already kind of talked about mine. Mine was Fred breaking down because she's carrying the team and, you know, everyone's happy to let her do it, except, like, she can't do it. So she's asking for help. She's admitting that she's struggling, and I really appreciated that. Kristen, what was yours?
Well, I really liked that scene, too, and I was having trouble coming up with one. But I did like the elevator scene with Angel and Gwen, just because, like, it was fun to kind of see him interacting with someone new and, like, being able to use his power, like, his ability to save her in that instance. Like, it was just kind of fun to see him in a new surrounding with new problems. Like, it wasn't... It was his strength and, like, his general power, not the fact that he's a vampire that, like, saved the day or, you know, cursed the day. Like, it was just... He had a different set of skills that could help her out this time. And I just liked that. It was nice. So, yeah, it was an interesting episode. And this little part was good fun.
Mm-hmm. And Mitch?
My favorite part is Fred's ghost drawing that said boo.
It was so cute.
It was precious. And apparently Angel is some kind of savant when it comes to sketching people and objects.
Yeah. I mean, we already knew that, though, didn't we?
You'll have to remind me. I don't know.
Buffy, he left her pictures of her sleeping.
Oh, I probably blocked that out because that's extremely creepy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was in jealous at the time, so, like, it's fair.
I mean, next time I get jealous of you, Karen, I'll just sketch you in your sleep. How's that sound?
It depends.
That should be the iTunes reward this week. Aunt Karen will sketch you in your sleep if she's jealous of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except I haven't cashed in any of the other. Well, I'm supposed to draw Rat Amy, and I still haven't done it because I am a terrible person.
That's like a reward for me.
All right, favorite lines. Mine is between Ethan and Gwen. Ethan was that guy that hired her. And she takes his watch, she slips it off his wrist, and then kills it with her powers. And he goes, that's a $12,000 watch. And she says, and now it's surrealism. And the art history nerd in me just really loved that line, so I couldn't let it go.
That's the artist that's referring to.
So not surprised.
What about you, Kristen?
Mine is more of an exchange because, you know, that's how I roll around these parts. It's with Angel, Gunn, and Fred, and Angel is talking about, like, them going to the police about Cordy, and he says, how about the police? And Gunn says, let's see, abandoned car, empty apartment. Fred says, no sign of violence, no plans for travel. Gunn says, please file a missing persons report. Fred says, and have a nice day. And then Gunn says, but hey, that was only the first time. The next seven times, they left off the nice day part. It's so true, though. Like, they're taking this to the police, like, over Cordy is not going to solve anything. Like, they can't help. Reporting her missing is going to do a big fat nothing. So I totally understood, like, why they were like, yeah, even if we hadn't already tried that seven times, it wouldn't amount to much anyway.
Gotta do it ourselves.
Yep.
What was your favorite line, Mitch?
Mine was also an exchange with Gunn involved. Gunn says, you think higher beings get to take vacations, Angel? The way I saw it felt sort of permanent. Gunn, too bad, could've all gone to Vegas. Which is fun, because he keeps wanting to go to Vegas. Now he's an excuse, because he's saying that he wants to go see Lauren. But before that, he was just like, can't we just go to Vegas? That'd be fun.
That would be fun. Hopefully that's a bonus episode coming up here at some point.
Or the comics. It's probably the comics.
Yeah.
But that would be a great hashtag the beach episode if they did go to Vegas.
Hashtag it's in the middle grade series. So we have a new hashtag now because Buffy is going to be a middle grade book series. If anyone has not heard yet, you can check out that news on hypeable.com. I thought that was pretty cool, actually. So we'll see how it goes. Them? I have not read any of the tie-in stuff or anything, no comics, no books, nothing, but I would not be opposed to it, although I think middle grade is too young for Buffy. I think one of the draws of Buffy is that it's a little more grown up and a little sexier, and it's one of the reasons why I liked the show so much, so reading a middle grade series, I'm just...
I mean, they're going to have to rewrite the show and start it over. Like, the pilot, quote-unquote, will take place in, like, what, fifth grade or something?
I don't know. Yeah, the whole thing's kind of weird. I'm going to need to look into it some more. But until then, we still have the show. And we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode 704, Help. In this episode, Buffy tries to help, but cannot. Poor seer Cassie isn't long for this world, and she knows it. The Scoobies investigate and unearth a demon sacrifice ritual that nearly takes Cassie's life. Alas, even with the demon and white boys defeated, young Cassie drops dead from a heart condition. I love this episode. Right? This is one of my favorite episodes that's sort of an unimportant episode in that it doesn't really drive the main plot, the main arc of this season forward, but it's a really good kind of bottleneck breather episode. And I really love that it's hard to figure out what's going on until the very end. And I think it's got really great characterizations, new characters that come in, and really great moments for Buffy in particular. And a lot of twists and stuff. So what did you guys think of it? Mitch, I think you're a fan.
I'm a big fan of anything whodunit, especially who's going to do it.
Yeah, that's true. That is a good trope.
Yeah, I liked this episode too, more or less because it just felt like Buffy. Like, it felt like those first couple of seasons, like with her having, you know, something to work on, and I like her being at the school, and all of that stuff with, like, her kind of finding her footing and meeting with students. Like, I liked all of that. So, yeah, I really did appreciate this episode.
I'm glad. Like I said, I really love it so much. And I think a huge part of that comes from Cassie's character, and I'm sure, like, this is, I think, pretty common knowledge if you have any interest in Greek mythology whatsoever, but Cassandra is a seer from Greek mythology who was cursed to see things, but nobody ever believed what she saw. And I just really like that they kind of twisted that for this episode. I thought that was really interesting. But Cassie does see her death coming. She sees a whole bunch of coins. She knows a whole bunch of coins are involved. And she goes to Buffy about it, and you can tell she, like, needs somewhere to talk about it, but she knows she can't prevent it, so she kind of doesn't want to burden somebody else. And Buffy, you know, goes all in. She really wants to help this girl, and Cassie just kind of waves it away. Is like, you know what, it's not going to change anything. I'm sorry I bothered you, kind of thing. And Mitch, did you put this in here about Dakota Fanning's character from Push?
I did, because she was a stringy blonde with colored hair in the front and psychic powers and a little bit of sass. Her name might have even been Cassie, I'm not sure, but regardless.
I always think this as well, and I love both of those characters, and really love the movie Push. So yeah. I got really excited when you put this in here, because while I was rewatching, I was thinking about it the whole time.
It's definitely like the wise beyond her years character thing that I like too.
Yeah. Okay, so we see a whole bunch of new characters in this episode, including Cassie. And a lot of these faces you guys might recognize because of other shows we watch or just pop culture stuff that's going on now. Kristen, I know you recognized a bunch of people right off the bat. So do you want to kind of go through these and tell us who some of these people were?
Sure. Okay, so the first one that we kind of stumble across is Amanda, who is played by Sarah Hagen, who I recognized but couldn't quite put my finger on where I knew her from. And the biggest thing that she, like, had done at this point that you'd probably know her from is Freaks and Geeks, which we covered. She plays Millie Kentner, which makes a lot of sense. She was also in, like, an episode of Grey's Anatomy, and for some reason that is what stuck in my brain, not the entire season of Freaks and Geeks that she was a part of, but whatever.
You mean, like, all of Young Hollywood was in one episode of Grey's Anatomy? Because I swear to God that she was a pan. Like, you can find anyone in any show has, like, everyone's been in Shondaland or specifically Grey's Anatomy.
It's true. It's absolutely true. But yeah, that kind of surprise, you know, I forgot about it. And when I opened the doc and saw this, I was like, yes, that's where she's from. Like, I knew I had seen her more than just one episode of something, but yeah. Next up on our happy hit parade is Zachary Ty Bryan, who plays Peter, the guy who lies about his parents and eventually is revealed as a member of the evil cult. Most people are going to know him from probably Home Improvement. He was also in two episodes of Veronica Mars as Kaz Truman. He kind of had like a period at the CW / WB where he kind of popped in from show to show. Like he was on an episode, like a, I think a couple of episodes of Smallville. I really remember him being there too. So he kind of made the rounds, and it was interesting to see him on Buffy because I definitely didn't realize he had, you know, made an appearance here too.
Kind of like how Charisma Carpenter later joins Veronica Mars too. It's like everyone just sticks around for the WB and CW once you're in that family.
That's true today as opposed, you know, back then, definitely.
It is super strange thinking back to the fact that I didn't know she was Cordy. And now I'm watching this show and I'm like, how did I not know she was Cordy?
So true. She's also, Charisma Carpenter is also a pretty major player on Greek. And really? So that's where I first met her. And so looking back on it now, I'm like, oh my God, like I can see the Cordy in that character and it makes so much more sense. So I'm kind of excited to go watch Greek after we finish Buffy and like kind of do a comparison because that's really interesting. Anyway, moving on.
That was ABC Family, I think.
Yes, it was.
So she finally escaped. Okay.
Next up is Tomas, the tough kid who is worried about his older brother joining the Marines, who is played by Rick Gonzalez, who you can see right now on Arrow as Rene Ramirez, aka Wild Dog. This one, I like put my finger like immediately. I'm like, I know who that is. Like, that's Wild Dog. What is he doing here? And he like hasn't changed. Like, he looks pretty much the same, maybe a teensy bit older, but like that actor looks almost the exact same now as he did then, which is just crazy.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm like, I didn't recognize him at all.
It's like the Gabrielle Union effect. Like, I swear, she's just
yes!
otherworldly. Like, that woman has not aged and never will. Like, she's just...
She was on Veronica Mars, too, wasn't she? She was. She was Wallace's girlfriend at one point, I'm pretty sure. I think that was her.
I don't know, but she's been in a million things, and she's just stunning. Anyway, and last but never least, Cassie was played by Azura Sky, who also had a role in the first season of American Horror Story. She did pop up on Bones. I was trying to remember what episode it was, but I'm completely blanking this morning and it's not working. But she's popped up a lot of places. Like, I think she's played a lot of smaller roles and things, and so she might feel more familiar to people.
She's very memorable, the way she talks, her face, like, she's just unique. So,
yeah.
If you've seen her once, you'll probably remember, even if you don't know where she was from.
Which is saying something for blondes on a CW show, because God knows we have a whole bunch, but even for just coming in for one episode, true. You're right, she leaves a strong impression.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I forgot to mention this last week, but Principal Wood... he's played by D.B. Woodside, who is currently a Menadeel on Lucifer, which makes me really happy that I get to watch him twice a week now, because he is quite attractive. And, Mitch, you ship him in Buffy?
I do, but he's gonna die. I mean, his name is basically Principal Woody, but just minus the E, so duh, he's gonna get eaten. Uh-huh. Talking about getting eaten from below, he's gonna be first to go. Like, the Hellmouth is right underneath his office, so I'm sad to ship it, because I know Buffy's already sad about it, and it seems like she's not really interested in Spike so much anymore, because he's too crazy, so she's like, might as well go for the principal. And he's so suave, like, everything he says and does, and that little goatee, I'm just like, ah.
So you think he's gonna die? You don't think he's evil?
No, he's not evil. He doesn't have room in his heart to be evil. He's too beautiful.
I mean, beautiful people can be evil.
But inside and out, I'm saying he's a great man who has a lot of great morals, and he's also very attractive.
He
so
does go on to play an angel in Lucifer. So That does kind of make sense to me.
Oh, I thought but you were saying he goes to the show Angel, and I was like, hey.
No. He plays an angel, singular, lowercase a, on Lucifer. Kristen, do you think he's evil, or do you think he's going to die?
I mean, right now, I'm getting good guy flashes. Like, I don't think he's got nefarious intent, but he is absolutely capable of it. Like, he's smart enough for it, and if he does have evil intentions, I would not be surprised. Like, it wouldn't be a shocker, but right now, I feel like he's a good guy, and I feel like he really is just a principal who is looking out for his kids and wants what's best for them, and so I'm on team good guy, but I will not be shocked if he ends up being way smarter and more evil and, evil than he appears to be.
Is everyone just saying that he's evil for the fact that he's coming in the last season? Is that I didn't think of him being evil once.
There's just something about him. Like, he seems really intelligent, and why is he a high school principal? Like, he's an incredibly attractive guy who seems very smart, and he seems so capable. So, like, it's just like, what are you doing here? You're too good for this world. What is going on? Like, there's got to be something going on with you. I think that's more or less what it is. It's not...
Plus,
I don't know. Yeah.
All of the previous principals have had something going on. The Hellmouth is under his office. Like, it just kind of feeds into the idea that this guy is not what he seems. But, that could be the trick right there. We suspect him, but in the end, he's actually a good guy.
Could be a red herring. You just never know.
Because I guess this whole entire...
It's a red herring of a red herring.
Oh my god. I guess this whole season, then, is a whodunit, because we don't know who or what is that big bad. I don't know what to call that thing yet, but I assume it's a thing, because it can't just be all those people at once. It has to be, like, a singular entity transforming it to them with their knowledge. I don't really get it still. I don't think we're meant to. But if anything, I could see him being, like, some kind of sorcerer if he had to be. Like, the one controlling that, leaving these voodoo pieces all around, making the bathroom collapse, leading to the basement, trying to sacrifice children to zombies, something to that effect. If I had to, but I hope he's not. I really hope he's just cool.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of magic, though, we do get a little peek into what's going on with Willow during this episode as well, because she's afraid that whatever this final battle with the Hellmouth is going to be, that she's not going to be able to help, or if she does help, she could possibly regress back into Dark Willow. And I wanted to know if you guys thought that this might actually happen, or do you think she's kind of safe?
I don't know. She's very aware of it now. It'd be very tough to go back to that. I don't know what would drive her to be that. Even if she had, like, extreme loss, I don't think she would, because she'd be like, that yellow crayon, though.
That's true.
Yeah. I want to believe that she's got more going for her. It's so hard, because I feel like something really had to drive her to delve into her evil side. Like, Tara's death was the event. So I want to believe that despite her not knowing how strong she is and knowing if she can handle it, like, I want to believe that she really can, and that if confronted with, the opportunity to choose it, she wouldn't choose to be that evil. And so, I want to believe that Willow is better than that and that she's going to overcome this. So that's what I'm choosing to believe at the moment.
And we see Willow go to Tara's grave and kind of accept the fact that she's dead. And I think, mourn her for the first time, potentially, and start to work through that. So I think that's important to keep in mind as well. But yeah. Dark Willow's always under the surface. And Mitch, you mentioned that, she's aware of it now, so that might make it harder for it to come back out, which I agree with, but we do have to remember that Dark Willow is always kind of there, the way that Angelus is kind of always there under the surface.
Yeah.
And granted, he needs something as well to kind of bring that out, but that potential makes it scary even when they're being the good guy.
Don't we all have the potential to be evil given a trigger, Karen?
We do. Oh my gosh, it's like this show has wider themes that can apply to life.
Yeah. But it's nice, though, because Willow's kind of filling
that. Why are we doing this podcast?
For real. It's nice, yeah, Dark Willow fills the role of Angelus now that he's over on Angel. I think he's doing a pretty good job of keeping it at bay, even though they're kind of stretching the rules, because he's definitely had some moments of pure happiness with that baby and Cordy. Regardless, I think he's more aware of it, so maybe he can fight it, like with that Darla sex. He was kind of fighting it, it seemed, so maybe she'll fight it.
But this, you know, Xander and Willow are the ones that are talking in that scene, and the whole team kind of comes together to help Buffy help Cassie, which is really cool. You know, Buffy tasks Dawn with befriending Cassie, and we kind of get wrapped up in this whole Mike thing where, you know, Mike wants to ask Cassie to the dance and Cassie refuses because she's not going to be around, and Dawn thinks that Mike's the person that's going to kill Cassie, and Buffy thinks that it's Cassie's drunk father, and both of them are wrong. And this is a fun fact that I didn't know, but according to Charles Arthur, in his book Digital Wars, the first use of to Google someone, as in, like, you have you Googled her, on television, appeared in this episode.
Which makes sense that they explained it then, because Xander's like, whoa, she's 17. Yeah. And Willow's like, it's called, like, an internet search, Xander.
Yeah. But isn't that, I mean, that's part of our daily vocabulary now. Google, yeah. Have you Googled this? Have you Googled that? And to think, the first time it appeared on television was this episode.
Like, Google is the Kleenex of search engines. It's just a thing.
Yes. Oh, my God. I really appreciated that. The Kleenex of that.
Search engines. That's beautiful. Poetry. Really, you are a poet, Mitch. That.
Well, I'm inspired by Cassie, honestly.
Oh, she's pretty great. She's pretty great. Also, and another shout out to her father. He's General Lane on Supergirl. And I mean, he's been in a thousand other things, but that's the first thing that popped into my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I believe he's Landry's dad on Friday Night Lights, too, which is where I immediately go to. But he really has been in a lot of things. So it's, you know, I'm never surprised when he just kind of pops up in a show.
You know, I know this may seem like a silly note to bring up, but I always find myself impressed with not just most shows, but it's particularly with Buffy more so than Angel, even with the set design and the fact that they're designing like a whole home for one entire scene just for the father here. And it really works very well the way it's all staged and they have the booze behind him and just the way that they're all standing in the house that they can have that all fall the way it does. I think it was all really well done and like it all feels so lived in always. I'm really impressed with the sets of the show. They've rarely disappointed, even when they're like that's like that house that Buffy and Spike were crashing down was like the lowest of the low there. But other than that, they do a really good job of like, you know, like back even in like season one, like designing like Rat Amy's house just to have it for that one episode and stuff. Like they go full out with pretty much everything in the show. And it seems like they don't even care about a budget here.
I like looking at the set designs too. And I think that's a good point. I like the way that they do that and how everything feels so real and you're like, but really it's not an actual house.
Like I forget that this is not a real house and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, but that's stupid specific and that no one watching the show would normally think that, but that's just as Natalie likes to say, a very Mitch thing to think.
I thought it.
In this specific episode?
Not in that specific episode, but like just looking at the sets and looking at the stuff that, you know, they fill the sets with. I love that sort of
so much idea. Detail.
Yeah,
like the magic really box, cool. It's incredible. Ugh.
Yeah. But, okay, let's get back to what's going on with Cassie because, well, I guess let's at least point out, too, that white boys are the worst, confirmed. Dawn gets asked out to the Winter Formal by the lead Satanist. And, that is, like, my worst, that was my worst nightmare in high school. Like, what if somebody asks me out, and I'm really excited, and they're just like, LOL, JK, and then I have to go, I'll carry on them, and...
Well, that escalated quickly.
Yeah. I mean, don't mess with my emotions. But Dawn handled it pretty well, to be honest. So,
she did, but she's a summer. She's built tough.
Yeah, she is tough. You literally know who's not handling tough. life well, though, Spike. He continues to be crazy in the basement. Sad. And he keeps hearing these voices. And Mitch, you're asking, you know, are they the ultimate big bad creature? Are they the ghosts of his past? What do you guys think?
I'm stuck on that. I don't know if I'm supposed to know. I keep leaning back and forth. Like, I hop the fence to say, yes, it's ghosts. And then I go back to say, not literal ghosts, just like his memories. Just like Angel used to do. And then I'm like, okay, no, it's just him talking to this invisible Darla, or Darla, Drusilla again. I can never make up my mind. Kristen, do you have any idea of what the heck's going on with this magic and his brain and the crazy? And
I honestly don't know what to think. Like, I would imagine that getting your soul back after so long without it, like, yes, it's got to be a huge thing, and, you know, I'm sure it's traumatic or whatever, but I don't know what these voices are, and I don't know, like, I don't recall Angel going through anything like this, so, I'm wondering if how Spike got his soul back, like, if that has something to do with this, or, you know, I don't know. I keep hoping that, like, we'll get some hints as to what exactly is going on in his head, but, like, so far, we've just kind of been watching him kind of go through it. So, yeah, I don't know if there's answers coming, but I hope so.
It's also been quite a long time, 3 episodes since we've heard Hyder tell of the Big Bad. That was only in the end of a season opener, so I think that they have to have these conversations, be the ultimate big bad to say that the big bad's been around. Because even when we had, like, the mayor or Glory or anything, they always had, like, a continuous string. They're always doing things, even if we didn't know it was them, just to, like, keep them in the fold, keep the plot moving forward. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm thinking this has to be both. I think he's so crazy he can't tell the difference between, like, Drusilla that he tortured into being the evil Drusilla, or Drusilla that's the big bad creature trying to torture him.
And I think this season so far is kind of luxuriating in the fact that it's the final season and we're going through these plot lines a little more slowly. And I kind of like that. It lets you wallow in the detail a little bit longer, and it kind of keeps that mystery high. So I enjoy the pacing so far. I honestly don't remember how I feel about the rest of the season, if that changes or if it stays the same. But right now, I kind of like that we're pumping the brakes a little bit. I like that this episode is kind of a standalone episode. And I like that we don't have very many answers yet, but we have a lot of questions because of that first episode. So that's really interesting. But one of the things that is important in this episode is, you know, Cassie, she can obviously see the future, and she kind of imparts knowledge throughout the episode. And she tells Buffy at one point that, you know, she tells Spike, I'm sorry, that she'll eventually tell you. And we don't know what she's talking about. And we also know that she tells Buffy, like, she'll be important. She'll make a difference, which is great. But in terms of the Spike thing, Mitch, you have an idea what this was about.
It's either I love you or your bleached hair is no longer a popular style trend of the century. I'm not sure which.
Kristen, if you had to pick one, which do you think it would be?
I mean, his hair. No.
Draco Malfoy wants his weave back.
Like, I wanna believe that it's either I love you or, like, some, you know, some sentiment like that. Like, she needs to kind of admit his importance to her, that he's not just this dalliance that she's like, oh, whatever, you know, like, I can put you behind me anytime. Like, Spike has left an impression on Buffy, and there's more to it than just, like, them sleeping together. So I want to believe that it's something incredibly significant, that she's going to admit to him that he's an important part of her life, you know, despite all of the crazy that they've gone through.
No comment?
You know, it's really self-serving to write in a prophecy in your own show, or movie, or book, or anything, because you're pretty much setting up everything for yourself in a lazy way. You get to just say, like, well, we know where we have to go, and we've already said it, so, like, we have to do it now. It's not like they have any room to, like, move from this now. And the reason I'm saying it's lazy is because it feels like they're just making it very, like, easy for the viewer to get to the point where they need to be. Because we know it's going to be I Love You, and we know that Buffy's going to make a difference. Yeah, but hearing those things, literally, it feels like they just gave very little effort, and they were just like, all right, let's just clean up the season right here. The series right here, even.
Well, it gives the audience hope. It gives us hope that something coming down the line is going to cause Buffy to be honest with Spike. Like, to finally let him in. Like, he's been so upfront about his... Like, he's really put himself on the line time and time again to kind of let Buffy know what's going on for him. And he's stuck himself out there. And Buffy just kind of keeps... you know, smacking him down. So to know that there is this lingering future in which she finally tells him something important that he clearly needs to know, it gives the audience hope that, A, Spike is going to work through whatever these voices thing, you know, this voice thing to hopefully get to that moment, and B, Buffy definitely has some growth coming. Like, there's something's going to push her to finally... have that moment. So
yeah,
I don't see it as necessarily self-serving. It's to kind of give the audience that hint that, you know, there's good things coming. Like, here's something to look forward to. Here's, you know, just one little tidbit of what the future holds.
But I would have gotten that without such a heavy-handed, like, quote that's going to tell me exactly how the plot's going to go. I think I would have been fine understanding that the show centers around these two characters doing their thing right now, and that they're going to end up fine. And even if that's not, I mean, I'm happy we don't know if they're, like, dead or alive. God, I feel like these prophecies are about to reveal that or something, but there's no or here. To me, it's just, neither can live while the other survives. This is just, this will happen, period. So I'm like, okay, what's the point of watching if the main conflict was solved right then and there?
It's the journey, though, isn't it? You know, like, why, if, and I'm not saying that this is what she ends up saying to him, but if it is, why is she saying it to him? In what circumstance? What does that mean? Is he dying? Is he gone? Like, what, you know, is he walking off into, I was going to say the sunset, that doesn't really work, though. But, is she leaving? Is she admitting her feelings? Are they going to be together? Are they endgame? Like, what is going on? I think, you know, they always say, like, there's only 7 different stories in the whole world, and the difference is how you get to the end of each of them. Mm-hmm. And I think in this case, even if we know what's being said here, or even if we think we know how the series is going to end, you always kind of want to know how you get there. That's why we watch these things. You know, it's why people read romance novels. Like, you know it's going to have a happy ending, but you want to know how they get to the happy ending. So this has never really bothered me, and I like the prophecies. I like the way that they've done the dreams in the past, because it's really fulfilling to go back and be like, oh my God, you know, they told us 3 seasons ago that this was going to happen. And I think that's why Buffy, like we've said in the past, has such a high rewatchability factor.
See, I'm still kind of meh. Maybe I need to rewatch it, but on the whole, like, you're right. We have had a lot of prophecies throughout the show, in both Angel and Buffy, especially with the Little Miss Muffet dream, like, you know, Catch Her Before Dawn or something like that. Like, that was all there. That was fine because that was more vague, but this was, I still can't get over how specific it was. I get that we know how it's going to end. It's the fact that they felt that they had to explain it to us, that it was going to end in a good way for these characters, that makes it feel like it was, like I was saying, lazy and just too heavy-handed. Like, it made me feel like they were, like, belittling the viewer into not being able to understand the conclusion on their own by, like, having to explain it to them or tell them it. It felt like a way I would not write a show myself.
Well, I kind of love that you think it's incredibly detailed, but all she did was say, like, she's gonna tell you.
Well, yeah, well, like, I mean, what else would she say?
I know, but, like, she didn't say what she was going to tell him. She didn't say... she was. Like, it was the most general statement she could have made for a prophecy, and you're still like, I know exactly what's going to happen. But do we, is the question. Well, like, you know, it's me. A prophecy, but it's, like, it's not, like, you know, a Rick Riordan prophecy where you get all of these lines and they could mean one thing, but they end up meaning another. Like, it's a very general moment in time that is eventually going to happen, but we don't know how we get there, and we don't know how they're going to be when we do get there, like what's going to have happened for them or what mental state they're both going to be in at that point. So there's a lot that we don't know. There's a lot to find out still.
I think I would when do myself a favor. That... If I was ever to write a book or any piece of fiction, I would not include prophecies and I would not include time travel. And I learned that from Harry Potter, very much so. And now continuing on with Buffy, I couldn't do it. There's so many things to worry about, not just plot holes, but also just ways that you're losing interest in the story, in my opinion, from the fact that you're giving everything less consequence from the fact that you're laying it all out or giving it the ability to change. I don't know. We'll have to move on from this because I know this is something we've harped on about, but I'm happy I can set my soapbox about it.
I was just going to say, when we get there, we'll have to revisit your feelings on it and see what you think of it. But yeah, back to Cassie and everything that's going on there. Obviously, the kids kidnap her and they're going to sacrifice her to raise this demon. And the demon does come out, but Spike comes to the rescue and the two of them burn the demon to a crisp and it takes a bite out of the lead Satanist guy. And then it bursts into pieces. We think that Cassie's going to be okay, like Buffy saved her life, everything's wonderful. They head out the door and an arrow shoots from a trap that one of the guys set up and Buffy catches it, breaks it in half and says, see, like you can do something to control like what happens and you can change your destiny, except her heart gives out and Cassie dies. And she dies anyway. And I wanted to know, did you guys have hope in that moment that everything was fine, that Cassie was going to live through this? Or did you kind of know, like, this is going to happen?
This is a funny way of saying this. Her performance was so strong that I didn't want more out of her. So I wanted her to die here.
But did you think she was going to die?
Yeah, because of that. Because of how strong of a performer she was. Because of how much oomph she was putting into her one and only performance. Okay. I just saw the actress kind of giving it away. But not in a bad way. I was fine with that. Yeah. That's one prediction that I made of my own. Thank you for not telling me it, show all the way.
Kristen, what about you?
It's always interesting when a seer predicts their own death in like a show like this. Because you want to believe them. Like, you want to believe that they are, you know, good at their craft and that they know that it's coming and that there's nothing that can be done to stop it. Like, it's one of those, like, I didn't want her to die because I really liked Cassie and I liked her ability to kind of, like, accept her fate. Like, she knew what was coming and she wasn't freaked out about it. She was, you know, she was moving forward and was fine telling Buffy, it's okay, I'm, you know, gonna be dead, whatever. But it also reminds us that, like, you know, death found her. Whether she was always gonna die from this heart attack or not, like, whether it was the actual, you know, she was always going to be sacrificed and that was her actual death or what, you know, it was her time and it found her. So, like, I think that's something to keep in mind as, like, this all goes forward, is that, like, fate is there. Like, it's, you can't escape it if that's truly your time, if it's truly, you know, look, found, like, fate will find you, basically. Like,
mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
So what's that telling us about the end of the season?
I don't know.
I'll just let that thought ruminate there. You're welcome.
Yeah, but thanks a lot.
I didn't know this, but CassieNewton.com used to be an actual website that you could visit. It was extremely popular, and it even had a guest book that you could write in. And you can visit it on the Wayback Machine. We'll put the the link in the show notes. I just went to it. There's like nothing there. It's got a scrolling thing that just says nothing is nothing. And like, you could see where the images should be, but they're all broken. And it's basically an empty website at this point. But there's a little bit of something there. But I think that's kind of cool that it was a real website.
Yeah, I wish I could play around in that.
International titles for this episode, the German one is called Helpless, and the French one is called The Prediction. I think they're both good.
It's funny that we have Help on ours, but Helpless yeah. is the German one.
Yeah.
And it works. Everything kind of works in its own way.
The Prediction, there's like multiple predictions. Meh. Come on, French.
There's one prediction above all others.
One ring to rule them all, huh?
Yes. All right, favorite scenes. My favorite scene was Cassie's whole speech outside of her father's house. I thought that she delivered it really well. And in that moment, you can tell, like, this girl wants to live, but she just knows that she's not going to. And she's sad about it, but she's also trying to accept it. And she wants people to stop helping her because it's giving her hope that everything's going to be okay. And right now, you know, the way to make sure she doesn't go crazy is just to accept the fact that this is going to happen. I especially loved the line when she goes, and I'd love to see my cousins grow up and see how they turn out because they're really mean and I think they're going to be fat. And I just, you know, it's a little levity in the middle of this heart-wrenching speech. And it's just such a teenager thing to say that I think they did such a good job with this characterization.
Yeah, that was very specific and cute in a very sad and kind of angry way.
Yeah. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Basically, I love the interaction between Buffy and the principal. There's something building there, whether, you know, it's just like her finding someone, you know, to talk to about the not so supernatural stuff, like having a sounding board for that, or I don't know, but like, I like what's building there, and I'm interested to see, hopefully he'll be around for this season, for the whole season, and not be killed 3 episodes from now. Hopefully, you know, it's really building, and I like what's going on there. I like what he's giving her. Like, she's really looking into who she is and what she can give the world, more than just saving it from vampires. Like, she can help kids, and I like what all is building there. So those scenes are always good fun for me.
Kristen, can we ship them? Can we ship Woody?
Oh, God.
Oh, bro. I mean, you can.
Wouldn't it be like Woofy? Can we call him Woofy?
Woofy? Well, I like Woody because it's like, you know, you got a friend in me, and they have that relationship.
Oh yeah, that's why you like it.
Okay.
It's not the sexual. My head's not in the gutter today. I like Woofy. All right, okay. Mitch, what's your favorite scene?
Mine is the entirety of Cassie's emo Tumblr blog, or whatever they used in that day and age, because it was fabulous.
It was just a website. She knew how to make her own website, which I'm sure back then was like, oh my god, such a big deal.
Well, it had like little like graphic effects, like when you like looked at one page, it was like text coming at you, like it wanted to tell you something, and I was like, yeah, tell me your stories, Cassie.
Speaking of set designs and everything, though, her bedroom was awesome with all that artwork on the walls. And
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking
about this stuff, too. All right. Favorite lines. mine was between Willow and Xander, and it's when they discover Cassie's website. And Willow goes, I even posted a melodramatic love poem or two back in the day. And Xander kind of perks up and goes, love poems? And Willow looks over and goes, I'm over you now, sweetie. And Xander just goes, love poems. And I love this for 2 reasons. I love it because just the reminder that Willow's over Xander. I mean, back in the day, especially back in the day for Willow and Xander, and back in the day for me, I really loved the idea of them together. I shipped it hardcore. But I like that it's done now, and that was a part of her life that she appreciates, but is over. And, you know, obviously she's a lesbian now and she's much more interested in women. And so it was a great little jab for between them, but also how excited Xander is that, you know, love poems were written about him. Doesn't matter that nothing came of it or anything like that. He's just so proud and, you know, love poems. It was a funny moment.
I thought that this actually represented a bit more of her bisexuality that they've ignored, because they do that, and hello, gay now, and I'm still pissed off at that. But I think that this was more of, like, yes, I've liked boys, and I potentially could like boys now, from the way that she says, I'm over you now, sweetie, as in the potential of being interested in him is still there for her if she wanted it, but she doesn't.
I think this was just, you know, it was just supposed to reinforce the platonicness of their relationship now. Like, you know, the finale from last season, you know, it reminded us of their history and like how important the history of Willow and Xander is to both of them, despite the fact that they've both kind of forgotten it. And now, you know, it's just another touchstone on that history, but it's not, I don't see them ever going near that again. Like, you know, Xander probably would be on board, but Willow's like, no, that's way buried. It was a thing, but it's, you know, a part of our past. It's part of our history.
Well, not him. I think she could like a boy, but I don't think it would ever be Xander. She could like a girl as well, is how I interpreted her saying, I'm over you now. But I can also see it being like, I'm over you now because I realized I was gay. I don't know. I don't exactly relate to that myself, because I've always known I've liked just one gender, but she seems to have known she's liked both, so I'm not her. I can't tell the difference.
And here's the thing, and I think it's really important not to erase bisexuality, because that is something that does happen. It is a trope. And I want to make sure that, you know, if anybody believes that Willow is bisexual, like, that's totally fine, and I'm not arguing against that. But at the same time, it's also important to acknowledge that you can have loved, you know, she could have loved Xander and Oz, and that could have been her truth then, and it's just not her truth now. And so she could be gay now, even though those relationships in her life were very important. Maybe that means she's bisexual. Maybe it doesn't. But I don't necessarily see this line as super problematic.
No, not problematic, actually. I thought it was opening and good.
No. Okay. well, that's good then. Kristen, what about your line?
Mine is this lovely little exchange. I believe they're standing outside Cassie's house. And Buffy says, Buffy the Vampire Slayer would break down this door. And Xander says, and Buffy the Counselor? And Buffy says, waits. I just like the fact that she said Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh.
I don't know why. Like, it's just, it's so, like, perfect. Like, there's no way to make your main character actually, like, say her name, since she's the name of the show. Like, for some reason, just her actually saying it out loud just got me. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, this definitely has to be mine.
Back to her
roots. I love her self-restraint here, though, you know, because she's yeah. She's not a particularly patient person, but she's really pulling it together and the last, like, season or two. She's really becoming mature, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mitch, you're going to have to give us a dramatic reading of your line.
All right. I wish I had a little Congo drum to, you know, do that thing with. But I'll read it very melodramatically, just like Cassie and or Buffy would have. So this is a poem.
Everybody put on your berets and dim the lights. Okay,
let's go. Start snapping.
Yep. Snap when done, just to be, yeah. So this is Cassie's second poem, and it is so emo, and it is so my 14-year-old self. My God. Cassie writes, I sit alone at my windowsill. Trees crackle, sunshine blares, and children laugh like death. Their sharp happiness is a knife to me, one jealous snake on a windowsill. They will be here, trees and sun, and children with canes and pruny skin. When I am but a memory, I laugh in the trees of time. I sit alone and try to love them. I sit alone, a snake. I sit alone and try to love them. I sit alone and laugh.
I would let you, I please narrate a book. I would listen yes. to that.
Your voice I would too. Is
so wonderful.
That's funny because I was hamming it up very... the most I could have to be like bad.
It's no, very I mean, warm.
It was at the end, like, you know, a snake. But like in the beginning, I was like, I could get behind this. Like, I would let you read me a book for you sure.
You have a very warm tone, and yes. it's very soothing and pleasant to listen to. Mm-hmm. So yeah. feel free to consider book narration in the future. Yes.
Please do.
I'll be the next Jim Dale.
There you go. I like Why it. Not?
All right, so thank you guys for listening. As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @re_watchable. Find this post on hypable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We also really love iTunes reviews. It helps other people find the podcast. So please impart the gift that is Rewatchable on, you know, other people. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will give you a toy car to hold on to if you want.
Oh, no. It's not going to end well.
I mean, I don't have electric powers that I've discovered, so I think it'll be okay.
Yeah.
You notice how they didn't show the dead body of the child because they can't do that, so just extremely focused on the smoldering car.
It's more poetic that way, Mitch.
Yes, and I understand poetry, much like Cassie.
We're going to jump into some listener feedback right now. We've got a couple of pieces. The first one is from your friendly neighborhood podcaster, a.k.a. Mai, who says, I'm surprised you guys didn't talk last week more about Anya and Willow interacting in Anya's apartment and the whole it got a little bit sexy situation.
Oh, my God. I shipped it.
I didn't think it really got that sexy.
I think it's from the fact that they were doing the same spell that Willow and Tara did at one point, the demon finding spell. It was kind of like, for Willow, it felt like she was testing the waters.
I thought their interaction was really great, though, and I like that Willow came to Anya to, I don't know, to do that, because they've, like, run into each other in the past and kind of butted heads, especially when Anya was new to Xander and all of that. There was a little bit of jealousy there, and the fact that they kind of came together in that moment was really nice.
This is going to sound extremely obscure, but it's the fact that they were kind of like stamping out the fire together that I was like, oh.
Is that something you do on occasion?
No, it's just like the context of that felt like it meant something. I don't know why. I really can't explain it. Like, my towel, you ruined my towel. And then they move on and I'm just like, oh, okay. I don't know. It had a tone. It had a tone, okay?
Oh, God. My mind's in the gutter right now.
Yes. Well, it should be because I think the show was.
Kristen, would you read this tweet from Stephanie, please?
Sure, yes. Stephanie Merrill at Smerily says, fun fact, similar to Anya slicing her face up, Willow having her stomach peeled and eaten was very traumatic to watch as a kid. It was very traumatic for me to watch as an adult, so I definitely understand. That was so... Oh, it's bugging me now just thinking about it. Like, ugh, I don't know. There's just something about that and how, like, it wasn't, you know, like if someone was, okay, this is going to sound terrible. If somebody was eating someone for practical purposes, like I must survive, it would be one thing. But like with how much that demon like enjoyed it and like savored it, it made it that much more disturbing.
Yeah.
That's about
the intention.
That reminds me of that picture of that chihuahua that was going around that had to eat his human to survive after his human died.
What?
Yeah,
it went viral.
Wait, is the dog actively eating the human in this picture?
No. The dog got adopted, and it was like a year later, and the person who adopted him was like, isn't this dog like super ugly and weird looking? Oh, by the way, it ate its owner to survive.
That feels like a publicity stunt.
The owner died of natural causes. The dog was left uncared for because this person had died and there was no food, so it ate its owner.
Chihuahuas they're some of the most vicious dogs, though. They really are.
I'll send you the picture. It's interesting.
Okay.
But anyway, in the meantime, can you please read this email from Rookbat3?
Sure. And Rookbat3, in an excerpt from their email, wrote in, "In regards to Xander's decision to go after Willow immediately, instead of getting Buffy a rope so she could go and save Willow herself, this is talking about the season 6 finale, I think that scenario made perfect sense. Who knows how long it would have taken him to find a rope long enough to get back to Buffy with it. He only just barely got there to Willow in time himself. Plus, considering how powerful Willow was, I'm not sure there's much Buffy could have done to stop Willow anyway. She didn't know about the yellow crayon, that's true. The only way to stop Willow at that point was to get Willow to stop herself."
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And Buffy probably would have just punched her and made her more pissed off.
I kind of thought the same thing. Like, he knew at that moment that getting Buffy out of the pit wasn't going to help anything, and so he left her there and went to save the day. Like, it just, you know, in his brain he was like, I know how to fix this, I'm gonna fix it now, and like left. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And we also have an email from Winona that's you know, a little self-flattery never hurt anybody, right? So Winona says, "Okay, so I just discovered your podcast and I just discovered Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I decided to watch along with the podcast, even though I'm way behind you guys. I just watched the Ted and Bad Eggs episode, and while listening to your feedback, you asked if anyone actually had to carry around eggs in school. Well, I never had to carry around an egg. However, I did have to carry around a sack of flour, which I failed at. There was an incident with duct tape and my grandma baking cookies that I'd rather not get into. And a baby doll that would cry all the time, which I also failed at by running home from school in the rain with a doll in its car seat slung over my shoulder. The baby making class teacher told me at the end of the unit that it would probably be best if I didn't have children. And I agreed wholeheartedly." Okay, pausing in the email for a second, because your grandma made cookies from your baby? That is so wrong.
It's very Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
Also, baby making class sounds terrible.
It does sound.
Like, was this home ec where they just rebranded it as, like, baby making class? Were, like, a lot of pregnant teens in your school? Like, I need to know.
They probably didn't call it baby making class. I think that's just what Winona is saying.
You know,
it was.
Sometimes they have, like, family prep classes or, like, something to that effect.
Yeah. It was probably something like that, yeah.
But baby making class just sounds great. I would love that class. I'd be like, all right, let's do it.
Oh, boy.
Okay, back to the email. "Anyway, I just wanted to let all of you know that I love the podcast. I also listen to Karen and Natalie and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and Selena and Game of Owns. Onceable is another favorite of mine. Keep doing what you guys are doing. You make me laugh and bring a perspective to the show I would not have noticed without you. I find myself being really excited to listen to the next episode to find out what you guys had to say about Buffy and the Scooby Gang. You guys are also making me want to watch Avatar: The Last Airbender, a show I would never have been interested in without you. I just want to understand the inside jokes. You should totally watch Avatar. It's great. Anyway, hope you all have a wonderful day. Winona." That was so nice.
Thanks, Winona.
That is really just lovely. Stay awesome, Winona. Stay awesome.
Yeah. I love getting emails like that, not because, you know, I need, like, the flattery or anything, but because we kind of do this in a bubble a lot of the times, and we're all friends, and, you know, we enjoy doing this with each other, and that's kind of how I always come into it, is like, oh, you know, I get to talk with my friends today about Buffy, but then I kind of forget that we also send it out into the world and that people listen to us, so, like, a reminder of that we actually, like, make people happy by doing the podcast is just really important to me. So thank you so much, Winona, for writing in. It'll probably take you a while to get to this point, but it'll be a nice little surprise in like 3 months.
I
when
told
you get
her what
to
episode
it.
She can listen to find it, so maybe she'll
Okay. Cool.
Good call.
Yeah, good call. All right. Last thing for this episode, Mitch's musings, Kristen's contemplations. We've got Angel 403, The House Always Wins, and Buffy 705, Selfless.
Well, I'm glad we didn't have Helpless, because then we'd have Selfless, and I would I'd be making all sorts of connections that don't belong there. Selfless. Who's being selfless, Kristen? Is it Buffy? Is it Dawn? Is it Spike? Is it Willow?
That would be the question. I mean,
get a pick.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was like Xander? He's so self-involved most of the time that it would be hilarious if he like spent an entire episode being completely selfless.
To be Buffy though, right? Because she's like working all these crazy jobs and doing all this for her family, and she's letting everyone stay at her house even when they don't even live there, and eating her food, breaking her furniture.
Well, what if it has nothing to do with what we think of as selflessness? Like, what if it's actually, like, someone loses their sense of self? Like, selfless?
Invisible, so, like, perhaps? Are we going back to Marcy?
Well, or just somebody loses their memory or, like, loses amnesia. Touch with who they are or something like that. It could be interesting. I don't know.
We did have a very amnesia episode with Spike being Giles's son.
Yeah. I mean, that was a little thing, but like, it would be one thing if, you know, if maybe, I don't even know, maybe Dawn is hit by some, you know, monster of the week and completely forgets who they are or who she is, and they all have to kind of like remind her. Or it could happen with Buffy or Willow or whomever, but like, I think it would be an interesting storyline at this point. I don't know. We'll see. Okay, and the house always wins.
Gambling, right?
I mean, yeah.
Vegas?
Definitely has
Vegas. Does Gunn get to go to Vegas?
Definitely has Vegas undertones, so...
They have to get Lorne eventually. He's still like... Is he in the main credits? I don't know if he ever was. But regardless, he's showing up every once in a while. I think they need him. So maybe it's like, we can only use Lorne for this, and we need to all go see him to get Cordy back.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. It also gives me
another loan shark or something.
Well, it also gives me concerns about Wolfram and Hart. Like, we could like think of them as like the house, as the dealers kind of things here. So like, the house always wins. Like, you know, if we kind of put them in that spot, like it could make things difficult. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too hard now, and I just need to shut down and let it go. But yeah, I don't know. I would like this to be everybody goes to Vegas, and somehow we come up with a way to bring Cordy back, and yay, and everybody's happy, because nobody has been happy in far too long. But I, you know, it wouldn't be Angel if something terrible didn't happen, so.
That is very true. He's much more suffering to endure, but he will enjoy
it. Yes. Yep.
Very good guesses, guys. And we're just going to have to wait until next week to see what happens. So thank you again, listeners, for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. And you can listen to us again next week. Until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.